It is often said that experience is the best teacher, and my colleagues and predecessors on this panel have based their views of the prospects for democracy in the Arab Middle East on their own direct experience with these countries and with issues involving democracy. My perspective is different. What I have to say is based on the experience of the world with democracy over the last two centuries, and especially since the last quarter of the 20th century. My understanding and interpretation of that experience. And that understanding and interpretation are contained in my new book, Democracy's Good Name, which Rob has been kind enough to mention. Now, I have a limited amount of time to put forward some of my views, and so what I have to say may sound cryptic or even unpersuasive. If that is the case, I urge you to read the book, where these views are laid out in greater detail and where all will become clear.
Or at least by the
book. Yes, it makes an ideal gift. I want to begin, really at the beginning, with a definition of democracy, because we use it all the time. We assume we know what we're talking about, and yet there is a tendency to misuse it, or at least not to be aware of its history. What we understand as democracy and what we mean when we use the term democracy is actually a fusion of two distinct political traditions that for almost all of recorded history, until very late in the 19th century, were not only separate but regarded as entirely incompatible. One of those traditions is what I will call popular sovereignty, that is, the rule of the people through representatives chosen in free elections. And for most of history, democracy meant simply rule of the people. But by democracy, we today also mean liberty. That is what we understand as freedom. And freedom comes in three varieties. There is economic freedom, especially private property. There is religious freedom, religious liberty, freedom of worship. And there is political liberty, the liberties guaranteed in the American Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the American Constitution. Now, understanding democracy as, in fact, a kind of hybrid or at least two-part kind of political system has at least two consequences for democracy the world over, including in the Middle East. One is that elections alone do not constitute democracy. A country cannot be said to be democratic simply by virtue of having conducted elections, even if they are free and fair. And, as a corollary, a group that does not embrace liberty is not democratic, even if it wins a freely contested election. This is true, for example, of the group Hamas in the Palestinian territories, which does not and will not qualify as a democratic force unless and until it embraces religious liberty and equal rights for women. The second consequence of the way democracy is properly understood is that genuine democracy is rather difficult to establish and in any event takes time. Popular sovereignty, that is, elections, are relatively easy to conduct. That can be done in a matter of days, weeks, or at most months. But establishing liberty is difficult. For liberty requires institutions and the skills to operate them and the diffusion of values that support these institutions. And establishing all these is the work of at least a generation. It's also the case, relatedly, that democracy, understood as popular sovereignty and the institutions and practices of liberty, must be homegrown. Democracy is not like a pizza that can be ordered from elsewhere ready-made. Well, how is democracy established? Since, as my colleagues have noted, it has been established all around the world in the last 30 years, and is now, by some distance, the majority form of government on the planet. Well, in Democracy's Good Name, I argue at some length that the worldwide demand for democracy comes from the success of the world's most prominent democratic countries, in particular, Great Britain in the 19th century and the United States in the 20th. these countries and others that joined them in the course of the 20th century in the ranks of the democracies set a powerful example to the rest of the world. And that example has permeated everywhere. But the example creates the demand for democracy. It creates the wish for democracy. But wanting democracy and getting it are two different things. The supply of democracy, in particular the institutions necessary for liberty, I argue in Democracy's Good Name, comes primarily, not exclusively, but primarily from a functioning free market economy. The free market is, I believe, the key to a successful, peaceful transition to democracy. That is because the institutions, the practices, and the habits of the free market, when transferred from the economic to the political sphere, promote democratic politics and democratic governance. The free market incorporates, for example, a form of liberty, that is, private property. And with private property, as Jeremy Bentham long ago observed, with private property comes the rule of law, which is the defining practice of liberty. The free market is important. Indeed, I would argue almost necessary for liberty and for true democracy, because a private economy, which the free market promotes, is the core of what has come to be known as civil society. That is, the collection of non-governmental organizations without which a genuine democracy is really not possible. And the free market helps to promote political democracy because operating a free market economy tends to promote habits that are necessary for political practice. Habits such as cooperation, tolerance, trust, and compromise. Now, all of this helps us to understand why democracy is scarce on the ground in the Arab Middle East. The example of democracy set initially by the United Kingdom and the United States is less powerful in this part of the world because it is initially, although certainly no longer exclusively, a Western example. And the centuries-long rivalry of peoples in that part of the world with the West tends to discredit, or at least to make it easier for the opponents of democracy to try to discredit, Western institutions and practices. Because a flourishing, successful market economy is also a rarity in the Arab Middle East, the principal template for democratic politics is missing in the region. And a major reason for this is the presence of oil. Oil, large reserves of petroleum, and one might add natural gas and even other valuable commodities such as diamonds, tends to be the enemy of democracy. For having these resources makes it unnecessary to have a full-fledged, well-functioning market economy in order to earn income. There's yet another obstacle to democracy in the Arab Middle East: the presence of different ethnic, religious, and national groups within the same country. Unfortunately, democracy is easier to establish in socially homogeneous countries. The obvious reason for this is that democracy does include, although it is not limited to, majority rule. If minorities do not trust majorities within the same country, they will oppose democracy because they do not wish to be ruled by the majority. And the kind of trust that is necessary for minorities to accept democracy tends to be missing in this part of the world. Well, the democratic example is hardly irrelevant in the Arab Middle East. There certainly are Democrats in these countries, although, alas, all too many of them seem to have chosen to live outside their native countries. Nonetheless, in any country in this region, one can certainly find Democrats. And, in general, the democratic example, the one set first by the United States and Great Britain and now by the almost 120 democracies around the world, does penetrate this part of the world. The specter of democracy haunts the Arab Middle East as it does other parts of the world. And that means that the undemocratic regimes of this region seek to resist it. One tried and true method of resisting democracy is to promote the danger, or at least the sense of danger, from external enemies. The specter of an external threat tends to give a regime which stands as the champion of the country that is resisting that threat more legitimacy than it would otherwise have. And the specter of an external threat tends to divert public attention from the misdeeds and misgovernment of the regime. Now, in this part of the world, as we know, two sources of external threat are prominent, the United States and Israel. Indeed, it seems to me that Israel and the Arab-Israeli conflict is so convenient for Arab regimes, at least in this sense, that it is fair to wonder whether there are any circumstances in which these regimes would in fact exert themselves to settle that conflict. Well, what is to be done? I go back to my point that the principal template for democracy is a working free market economy, and that a major example, a major obstacle to the establishment of a working free market economy in the Arab Middle East is the gusher of oil revenues that these countries enjoy, some of them at least. It would be, therefore, a major contribution to the promotion of democracy to reduce those revenues. And we know how to do this. We know of a measure that would substantially contribute to reducing the revenues from oil. But we lack the political will to enact it. That measure would be a tax on gasoline in the United States comparable to the taxes paid by consumers of gasoline in Western Europe and Japan. So this leads me to a concluding thought. If the political capital created in the United States by the attacks on Washington, D.C. and New York of September 11, 2001 had been used to raise the gasoline tax in this country, we might be closer to Middle Eastern democracy than in fact we are today. Thank you.